Hey, everybody. Hope all is well in your part of the world. I'm really excited about our time together today. We have a special guest with us. I've known probably a little less than 5 years, but both Tamara and I have so enjoyed the spirit of he and his wife whenever we spent time together. And I'm talking about Pastor Paul Fosslyn from Naples Church. And thanks for taking time to be with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm glad the hurricane stayed west of you guys today. And we're praying for the people in Florida it's bearing down upon at the moment. But I think you and I first might have heard of each other from the whole hurricane situation. I think Gerald Brooks might have connected us. And we had just gone through Hurricane Harvey, and we had Convoy of Hope and Samaritan's Purse operating out of our parking lot. They did such an amazing job. And then you guys were getting ready and you were kind of forming your strategy, I think, at that time. And then you guys graciously consented to host our annual Significant Church Conference. And the pastors who went to that know you guys served us so well. And that's what we're going to talk today. We're going to talk about, nurturing a culture of service within your church, because it doesn't just happen. People have to be mobilized. People have to be trained. People have to be nurtured. People have to be cared for. They have to be led through the seasons of life. So I look forward to talking about that. And maybe, Paul, today, first of all, I just want to say, if you're new to Significant Church, that our goal is to help pastors find resources they know they need through relationships they absolutely enjoy. And when that happens, we start reaching dreams. We start exceeding dreams. So that's our goal. We count this as our lunch appointment. We promise to bring leaders on that you'd love to go to lunch with, because they're going to make you better whenever it's over. So maybe this is a good starting point today. Talk to me about, can you think back to those days when you were overwhelmed with how am I going to get all this done?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we started the church 25 years ago, we did it all wrong. There weren't back then. It was you stepped out by faith and you just did it. And so it was my wife and I. So everything was overwhelming. And so it was a real challenge, starting and getting people to serve and be a part. And it just was a lot of us. And when we were in Russia and we were starting our ministry, we almost ended and gotten divorced because I felt like I had to do everything and tried to do everything and just about destroyed our marriage. So we've kind of gone through the first two things of feeling like we got to do everything at once. If we don't have people, we got to do it. And so a couple things we slowed down, but also it made you really quickly after a couple of those learn you got to develop a strategy to, to get workers in, to find people to help and all of that. So yeah, a lot of being overwhelmed early on, not having the right things in place.
And, I've seen the challenges change over the years. Like, I wasn't really a pastor at this time, but I remember the early days of when churches like ours started, and we showed up because we loved worship and we loved learning the word of God, right? And we weren't thinking about serving. There wasn't a lot of serving going on. If the sound system worked and the building was pleasant and everybody could worship and hear the word, that was good. And then all of a sudden, the church became more diverse, and we started serving people a lot of different ways. And that put some pressure on us back in the day to begin to say, okay, how do we do this? And it's so much more than having a good policy manual, though a good policy manual is essential. So I look forward to getting into it today. But first, let me welcome our new members to Significant Church. I think we're at about 1,200 member churches right now. And look forward to you guys finding people in your region, because it's not good to live isolated. It's good to find people you trust and to let iron start sharpening iron. But here's some new members today. David Carringer from Calliant Ministries in Nixa, Missouri, in North Carolina. Pastor Nathan Cook from Grace Point Assembly in Winfield, Kansas. Pastor Eddie Cross from Living Spring Harrisburg Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Pastor R.C. Davenport from Real Life Church in Greenwood, South Carolina. Pastor Patrick Robert from Goomba Philadelphia Church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Pastor Nestor Miguel from Bronx Church and Pastor Tobin Jackson from Trinity Baptist in Oklahoma City, Pastor Wilfredo from Community Disciples of Christ in Miami, Pastor Nathan Shear from Yanush Assembly of God in Tuscaloosa, Oklahoma, Pastor Scott Steed from Christian Cross Church in Alida, Ohio, Pastor Aaron Summers from First Baptist Church in Crowley, Texas. Now, these international members, Paul, I know I'm messing up their name. Did I get yours right or did I get it wrong this time? I've gotten yours wrong once.
Fosseline.
Is it Lean?
Yeah, Fosseline.
Okay. So I was a little bit insecure because I gotten it wrong once. But let me apologize to these guys in advance. Pastor Agaba Allen from All Believers Church in Kampala, Uganda. Pastor Nathan Malungo from Good Hope Life Ministries in Moise Bridge, Kenya. And Pastor Asan Sahatra from Apostolic Charismatic Church in Islamabad, Pakistan. So I want to thank you guys. I want to give just a partner shout out for people whose prayers and whose ministries are making a difference and helping pastors not live isolated. Pastor Buck Eaton, I knew him back in my days at Lakewood. He started attending Lakewood under my father-in-law, John Osteen. He worked in the financial service industry at that time, a prominent Wall Street company for lots of years. But at age 40, God called him to pastor, and he's pastoring Sweetwater Church in Sugar Land, Texas. So, Buck, thank you for what you're doing for pastors. So, Paul, I put my thoughts in three areas. You're welcome to add four and five. I don't think it's complete. This is just what I thought about. But I like alliteration if it helps me remember things. And this time we happen to have it. I don't always have it. But nurturing a serving culture in me requires three things. Number one, establishing a serving mindset, which isn't easy. That takes time. Number two, creating a strategy to mobilize people. And then number three, overseeing team maintenance. So if we do one of those without the other, I found over the years that it just doesn't work really, really well. So talk to me about the first one. How did you establish a serving mindset in the life of your church?
Yeah. Can I just kind of touch on one quick thing in a different area first, just about serving pastors and what you guys have set up?
Sure.
Just 30 seconds. You know, I love how you guys are doing things and helping each other and serving pastors, because when we started our church a year and a half, we were a year and a half, and there was a guy in our church that embezzled $80 million. And the SEC came in and shut him down. And then, you know, and he had given us some money for a building. But it wasn't like he didn't like give us all this money, but they came after it, and they came after everybody. And we were in that lawsuit for 5.5 years. And being even a part of a different organization and all of that, can I tell you, not one person came and called and helped us. And we had to go through it all alone, unless I reached out and just tried to get some advice. And, you know, and that's why I love what you guys are doing, because you're serving and helping pastors through things. And so I just wanted to, I know that's such a big part of Significant Church and just the importance of that with one another. So I just wanted to throw that out, how much just I appreciate having and knowing there's a network of, you know, pastors that can find help in different things. And so,
yeah, and I just want to encourage guys, like we started, Paul, and you know, because we were on a call the other day where with the local connectors, we're going to Zoom, we're going to stay in touch, we're going to try to help each other. And we know we're always there in a crisis, right? We've got time. You can't do that for everybody though. So, but the networks need to be set up to nurture the call of pastors and to be there for pastors in critical times. And just some of the things I can tell you that I've enjoyed so much is walking with a pastor who found out his son was in a lifestyle. You know, and he felt enough love to confess it. And we prayed and we wept. And now that son's his assistant pastor, married, has kids, just beautiful.
Oh,
right?
Awesome.
Another person, and this happened a lot, honestly, another person, his father-in-law raised him up as a youth pastor, gave him the church. And then there were just differences, and it affected his daughter. And just seeing pastors come together, and these are things, I'm not going to say any names, obviously, but these are things that there are real issues in the life of pastors, and they're not all church growth. I mean, some of them are. Yeah. We want to empower people so their churches do better. I know I needed that early in my life. I need some friends too. So anyway, well, thank you for being with us, and thank you for saying that. So, establishing a serving mindset. I know it was something for me to, I really had to sit back and think about it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we've done to do that mindset, at least over the years, I just always try to interweave our core values in the messages. And I always liked what Martin Luther said, a religion that gives nothing, costs nothing, and suffers nothing is worth nothing. And, you know, so I always try to tell our church the why, because, you know, and that just goes back to value, you know, the core values. As you know, values influence and guide our behaviors, our activities, and our focus. You know, values define our identity, values define our choices, you know, and they're really the compass, that internal compass that guide us in life. And so as a church, you know, this is something that I interweave all the time with establishing the mindset of serving is, you know, we have five core values that, you know, that we identify that help us, you know, determine our compass and all that. And, you know, one is just what we call go outside. Second is authenticity. Third is mi casa es su casa. And number four is everybody does the dishes. And number five is a safe place. And so you, my church will hear me always talk about number four, everybody does the dishes. And you know what, it's Thanksgiving, when only mama's doing the table, cooking, doing, you know, I just use simple examples how, you know, so many times just, you know, when we all do our part, no matter if it's cleaning, cooking, but it's when everybody does their thing, you know, and we just say, you know, everybody at Naples Church does the dishes. And so I just constantly reinforce that to get them to go and do start here and then our, you know, growth track and to get them involved. So it's just kind of a way that we've, that I just try to always communicate and just put it in messages, you know, to just establish that mindset over the years.
Yeah. I think what you said that's really important is that it's not all systemic. In fact, the systems don't really work until you establish a spirit where you and the people are connecting and we're getting this. And I have a thought I want to share about that later, but I didn't start my church. I took over a church that had 80 families, and there were probably 20 leaders of teams that were in those 80 families. So the pastor before me actually trained some people really well. I had a committed nursery leader and children's leader and youth leader and intercessory prayer leader, somebody who ran the sound, even somebody who cut the grass. So I'd have to go cut the grass before service. Now, he didn't have much of a care system. All the care came on me, and I had to figure out early how to start care families if I was going to pray and minister God's word at the level that I felt like the church would start having some momentum and growth. But I met with the leaders once a month on Saturdays, and it was really common that they would come to me because of two things. Almost every Saturday, there was somebody who would want to resign out of those 20. It wasn't every Saturday, but it was a lot. And there were two issues. Number one, they just felt inadequate. You know, serving people can be hard. And if you're doing it for free, per se, you know, I know we do it for the Lord, and that's a great pay in heaven one day. But there's no compensation to it. There's no reason they have to show up, especially if they're a young Christian. They don't get that. And so if you feel inadequate, and then as your family issues change, one of the first things that slide is the commitment that you make to serving. So we'll talk about more about that when we talk about how you have to have a maintenance program for your people to continue to serve. But I realized that we had to change the mindset, because basically these 20 people were enjoying ministry and the rest of the people were enjoying being served. And so I think in a lot of churches, the pastor's the one feeling that, but your people feel that too, if you don't get this right. So our answers to that were these things. First of all, I don't know if you do this or not, Paul. If not, I'd love to hear how you do it. But I have something called VNO every service, and it's just 3 minutes. And in 3 minutes, our missionaries don't have to come off the field. I can let them talk to our church with a video. And the church can get to know our missionaries. In 3 minutes, we can honor a Dream Team member. In 3 minutes, I can talk when I need to about the whole concept. I love everybody does the dishes. I'm not always as creative as that. I need some help. But, but you know, a lot of people in the old days would teach on giving during the offering. And you can do that in a time. Like I started this year teaching on just financial stewardship. Right. And one of the things that young couples enjoyed, because I found a Money Milestones course, was a lot of them had never thought about using their tax-free 401ks and letting tax-free money accumulate. They were focused on paying off their mortgages, and it just kind of made them think twice. But I think that using that helps a lot. If you use that just 3 minutes of service and make it a variety of things, so people want to be part of the family where we're asking to do the dishes. You know, I think that's a critical thing. So, of course, we all have next step classes, and I think those are helpful. But to me, it really does start with the spirit of it. How about the second thing, creating a strategy for mobilization? What do you guys do, Paul, in that area?
Well, you know, just to take a tail end off what we were just talking about, just this week we had, you know, about creating that culture and mobilization and just getting people in. You know, we always have said, and you've heard this, you know, I mean, welcoming and serving begins, yeah, those that are parking from the time they come in. And we literally had a new church start next door to us that is kind of similar to us. And 2 weeks ago, a father with his kids went into that church. And, you know, he went, couldn't find the children's area. Nobody said hi to him. Nobody welcomed him. Literally nobody at all. You know, he just kind of wandered and tried to figure it out. And he stopped and he said, I'm going to go to the next church, which was ours. And he came in, and this is what he told our children's pastor afterwards. You know, he came in, he got greeted, he got helped, he got walked to where he needed to go, you know, and we had, you know, that culture of everybody's there to help and do the dishes. And just the difference of that serving mentality of that we're all servants. And the people that are coming in truly, you know, they're, you know, looking and helping and all of, you know, all of those things. It really has made a difference. And so, you know, that helps us when it comes to moments and sharing those from the pulpit, you know, hearing like you do, those testimonies and all of that. You know, another thing that I do is we have a lady who's 103 and she serves.
Wow.
And she serves twice a month as a greeter. She sits on a chair and she serves as a greeter. And so that alone, just talk about moments and culture, and to be able to bring that to the church and say, listen, there's a gal who's 103, you know, and if she can do it, everybody can do it, you know. And so just like you know, the moments of bringing people up on stage and giving them, you know, serve team awards, you know, we have that legacy award, the above and beyond award. And which one of the ones that I like, you know, is, you know, just individual ones where, you know, I'm looking at a couple of them that we've written down, but, you know, funny ones too, who changed the most diapers, you know, most coffee spill cleaned up. And, but we have one, which is, you know, our vision, a place where love works. And then we just have, I Love My Church Award. And we just constantly talk about that. It's an attitude. You know, it's a heart and it's not the building. And so, you know, just taking these things and really just trying to always make moments from them. But honestly, that lady who's 103 is one of the best, you know, just, I can't tell you how much that we, you know, that resonates with people.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever felt this way in the early days. I'm going to tell you, I did. I would come to the office and I would feel like, man, I don't know if I want to join my church.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had to figure out a way to get the Spirit right and create a strategy for mobilization. And here's what helped me. Though if you see me looking away, it's because I'm taking notes. I benefit. I tell guys that all the time. I said, I'm taking notes. I'm doing this biweekly lunch appointment for myself, because I learned when I started helping pastors that I might have been the one benefiting the most, because I was meeting all these people who were sharing so much. But what you just talked about is so important, because community is about commonality, right? Yeah. One of the things, Tamara, I loved when we met you and your wife is that there was a real healthy, what I call honor honesty equation with how you guys related to us. And I like people who are that way, because if there's a lot of honor and there's not honesty, it's not long till somebody's getting abused, you know?
Yeah.
And abuse might be a strong word, but certainly ignored, neglected, whatever. Because it's not until everybody around the table can speak that we have a full perspective and we learn how to serve each other. And so you guys were really honoring. You were sweet as could be. And then there's just honesty. And it was just, you know, when I see that, it always makes me stand back and take notice, because I'm not that smart of a guy. But if I can get in a room where people feel free to be honest with each other in an honoring way, in a way where what it feels like at the end matters more than who's the smartest guy in the room. It matters more than, you know, if you can get that, you can build a good marriage, right? You can build a good family. And I think some of what I hear you saying, that wasn't in any of my notes today, but as you were saying that, I was feeling that same thing. And that is that it starts with that, you know, where you realize that people, if they're going to make an investment, They want to inherit something. They want something out of that. And that's true when you and your wife meet. That's true of everybody who joins our churches. So I think a strategy for mobilization really does start with helping our people see the why, you know, of why we do what we do. And I put this in my notes that, first of all, we help people see our why it matters for us to do this together. So, you know, I coached a select baseball team. I kind of got, I don't know. Michael was 13. He and his friends ganged up on me and asked if I coach a traveling team. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lifetime memory, the truth is. But, you know, bringing the parents together, what they wanted to win. And their kids started 0-13. So you'd have a parents meeting, and they made it to the AAU national championship by the time we were done.
Wow.
But it was a lot of hard work, and it was a lot of getting people to see our way versus, you know, just my way. And it's true in the church at all as well. And a VNO helps with that. And then once they see our way, then I think we help them see their way. And Rick Warren shared this. Maybe everybody's heard of it, but it really helped me. He said, everybody has a unique shape, which means they have spiritual gifts that are unique. My wife's going to be real merciful towards somebody. She's going to feel what they're going through. I'm going to want to encourage them and feel like I helped them. Both gifts are vital, very different. Yeah. Then we have a heart for things. You know, if I wasn't a pastor, I would be, I'd probably start in a preschool, and I'd want to be a small group leader. And I don't want to be my kids' friend's small group leader until they graduate high school. That's probably what I'd do in a church. Because we all have hearts for something, you know. But if you put me on the cleaning crew, you probably think everything was dirty. You know? So we all have spiritual gifts. We all have a heart for things. We all have abilities. We all have personalities that are good for some things and maybe not as good for others. And then we all have life experiences where we tend to have more compassion, more connectability to people. So I think that if we want to nurture a culture of service, it starts with really intentionally working on a mindset. I don't think you can do it in just preaching a couple of messages on it each year. I think you have to keep it alive in the life of the church and just stay conscious that we're helping people see the reason for us. And then we're helping them see that this should lead to a more fulfilling you if you're really a part. And that's work. So any other thoughts on that, Paul?
Well, you know, for mobilization, you know, I'm pretty healthy as, you know, still I'm 57, but, you know, I think for mobilization and some of the things we talked about is, you know, there isn't one event at the church that I don't stay to help set up or tear down. My wife and I, we do everything.
Yeah.
I spent like 60 hours power washing before Easter one time. And it's not that I don't have a church that can't help. I just get out and people see me doing and serving just like they would. I'm not asking them to do something I wouldn't do. And I just never, ever, you know, and that's what I love about you guys. The same thing about that honor and this is just who we are. And, you know, we won't, the people see that we're there to serve them too. Not I'm pastor, you guys do everything for us. It's like, no, my first role is to serve you. And so we really try to help to serve our people that way and tear down and set up and do all those different things. You know, another thing we do is we kind of go against the grain on some stuff. Like we still have choir people on the stage, but we have a gentleman who's 70 years old playing guitar and he's Hispanic. So we have people that are 70 and people that are in their 20 on our stage. And we just really believe that a church should be a slice of the city. And so when you
look beautiful, really. Yeah.
You know, and what happens is when people see that, it gives them confidence to be a part of the church. It gives them that confidence. And so it helps us to mobilize when it comes time because people can relate and see that, hey, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not all young people up there. It's not all this or all that. That's one aspect. You know, another thing that we do, and we've all heard this, you don't grow in isolation, but community. And so that's such a huge part of our strategy is when we do big church events, like our Salvation Army outreach, or we brought in the Vietnam, you know, traveling wall one time. I think I was telling you last week, our Summer to the Max that we do all summer for our kids. Yeah. What we do is we do a soft, I guess you'd call it that, just that soft ask where we ask people just to help watch the kids at an inflatable or give out popcorn or be at a sign-up table. And so like for our Mission Christmas, we'll have a big group of people, you know, go for Salvation Army and buy toys and do all these things. But we try to get people who've never served to just count toys or man the table and, you know, so they feel what it's like and they see it and then, you know, and to help in the kids just by watching the room or whatever. And then we work on recruiting them and saying, hey, now let's get part of a team. And it's amazing how many of those people by doing that, it mobilizes them to want to become a part. Because it's like, hey, just come and be a part, you know, and then they feel that and see it. And it's much easier than for that ask.
Yeah, that is so good. I mean, I've heard people talk about soft asks in terms of like greeters and ministries that are easier for people when they start. But that's really good. Like at a serve day or something like that. I made a note about being more conscious of the self ask, because what happens, you kind of motivated a couple of thoughts inside of me. But when Paul spoke to the Ephesian elders, he said, it's Jesus himself who taught us. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Yeah. I mean, Jesus taught us that. Yeah. So I'm totally with you on, I mean, you can't be at every event. You're not omnipresence. You can't be at every person's event. You can't be a part of every ministry because there's way too many ministries going on. But you can be the pastor who, what we do after church is we do, I'm in my spot, Michael's in his, as people leave. And we stay till the last person leaves. But we have a staff meeting right after church. So what that means is there's like a 20 to 25 minute window, which is appropriate for anybody who'd want to talk to us right after church. And then after that window, we have to meet with our staff. That way we don't have to, if there's somebody who's asking for inappropriate care in the moment, you have a natural out with that. Yeah. But just wanting to stay and wanting to hear their stories and wanting to do their best to serve them, that does something on the inside of you. I remember I came to work day. We were moving from our little sanctuary into a gymnasium. And one guy told me to go home because he said, "You need to raise money and you're hurting my nail gun." So I gave his nail gun back, but I tried to find something else to do, because you're right. You need to be there. And the people need, if they don't feel how much your heart is to serve them and their kids and their family, then that's for sure.
I get yelled at too. It's like, "Pastor, just let us do it." You know, they're like, just, but at least they see I want to.
Yeah, well, I told the story during the offering. I think he raised money inadvertently, right? I don't know. But anyway, yeah, so we've talked a little bit, and you can get a policy manual, but obviously some of this is going to have to be the Holy Spirit consistently helping you to establish a serving mindset where everybody likes it. Because you can, for instance, you can have a dream team honor, and people can be sitting there saying, "Well, he's trying to get more people signed up to work for the church." And people will disconnect, not because it's not the right thing, but they don't trust your motive. So you have to really work hard at creating that servant mindset, and then at, you know, doing what's necessary so people see that why our way is important, but then their personal part is important as well as we mobilize. Here's a final thing I thought we'd talk about today, and that's just overseeing team maintenance. You know, we had a talk with the staff the other day, because this ever happened to you, but every time I hire a new person, they'll say, "You know, not everybody on that Teams list is actually serving," right? Like, they'll go into the database and they'll say, "Not everybody on that Teams list is actually serving." And so the other day, I kind of finally, it only took me 35 years to come up with a response. I said, "Well, let me ask you something. When people get a gym membership, after about the first or second month, do you think that some of them aren't using it anymore?" And they all started laughing. And I said, "So why are we shocked when that happens with serving in the church? Why are we shocked whenever people aren't part of a team?" And so we have to be the ones that keep them motivated to do what they want to do. And we have to be the ones that help them deal with the priority issues that come up in their life. And whether we think they're right or wrong, the truth is they're going to need nurture, because we all do. Maybe for us, we're nurturing people in the importance of church for their family. Maybe for a healthcare instructor, he's nurturing somebody in the importance of working out every day, you know?
Yeah.
What do you guys do to kind of nurture team health?
You know, one of the things, I guess, that, again, it kind of what I just really teach from the pulpit and talk to our people. Well, really two kind of, you know, one thing is we have a phrase, serve one, attend one. Yeah. And only because, you know, we have multiple services, so we can. But to maintain that health is, we really try to make sure people are getting into service and staying connected, you know, along those lines, staying healthy, keeping the right priorities, you know, in place, that you just can't give. And I know your heart's there, and try to protect them from themselves also at times, you know, the ones that just seem like they just want to serve, and you think, "Oh, that's great." But you got to, you know, we try to protect them from themselves. And just say, "Hey, take a break." You know, we'll literally have people just, "Hey, step down for a month." You know, if you know, a lot of it is training our team leaders to be aware of what's going on in their people's lives. So if they see them stressed out, give them a break. You know, we try to, from the top down, teach priorities. It's God, then it's you. And I know, you know, and I heard that years and years ago, and we've just really tried to focus on that, that God's got to be number one, but then you need to take care of your health too. Not you in a selfish way, but you to stay healthy so you can continue to, you know, be fulfilled and give back and help. You got to work on, you know, yourself and to grow and, you know, all those different areas. And so, you know, we really try to be honest about personal things with people, oversee them, help them, you know. And then again, you know, I know churches do this, but just keep it fun. You know, I mean, I know that sounds simple, but it's amazing how much, how healthier things are when a team is, it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's
that's
not.
That's why it says, you rejoice always, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's going to start getting toxic when the joy's gone.
And, you know, and so, and again, you know, just, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's just a lot of just every team has an assignment to grow their own people and visit them and, you know, kind of like what we do. We just try to assign that all the way down and just really just, you know, try to be aware of what's going on with your people.
How many people do your leaders oversee, Paul?
Well, it depends on the area. You know, I'm again, I guess which leaders are, you know, staff.
You're saying some of your teams are bigger than others, and sometimes you have more leaders than others in areas. Is that?
Yeah. You know, like probably like you at your church, our greeters are the largest.
Yeah.
Well, children's is actually, they have like over 200,
right,
you know, people serving in children's. And then our serve team, you know, our greeters are, you know, they have a lot. And then, you know, it just trickles down based on the area. But then it just depends on how many people, how many then assistant team leaders they need in each area. In every area, like our children's pastor's really good at keeping his people and sustaining them in different things. And so that's now where the system comes in for us to really help keep track of having things in place to meet those needs of the people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we try to do it 1 in 5, you know, but again, things just shift a lot. Generations are different. You know, 25 years, you've seen the shift from people attending every week.
Oh yeah.
They're being, and when you hear why, it's people who love God, but they went through a divorce and they're trying to figure out how they shuffle the kids around. And, or for some people, there are legitimate things that are going on with their kids that for them to get a scholarship or for them to do something, you know, you hear and you think, well, these aren't people with bad hearts here, or some people's work, their work just makes it difficult. Of course, there are people who just have their priorities wrong, but not everybody's in that boat. And so it is important to have leaders. And what we try to do is we say there's three things that we want our leaders to do. We want you to have personal, regular, celebratory contact.
Yeah, so that's really good.
Yeah, so you're like when something big happens in their life, even if you see it on Facebook or you're in there and they know that you see what's going on that's significant in their life, good and bad. And the only way you do that's if there's regular contact, right? And then to just keep it celebratory, you know, because so few people have had somebody who does celebrate them like that. Now, for me, my church is 35 years, and we're going to have to launch something called Leadership Academy. And part of the reason we're doing it is just because we're blessed that our older generation has stuck with us pretty well. I mean, we're really blessed by how they've done that. But we also have to get a new generation ready, right?
Yeah.
It can be have two sides to it. And then I don't know what you guys do. Do you do many team fellowships, Paul?
We do. Yeah. We try to do them once, you know, the months where there's 5 Sundays, then on that Sunday night, that weekend, we try to bring people together and have a time to celebrate and have fun. And then we leave time just to break out for small groups. You know, each team can meet a little bit on their own. But it's just really to celebrate them. We give things away. We just have, you know, just vision casting and fun and games. And then we just try to really honor them during that time. And then if people need to meet, they can break up and meet individually. Can I go back to what you were talking about just for a second when it comes to maintaining, you know, health and different things? You know, one of the things that we do is, you know, I'm really careful not to make people feel bad or feel ashamed if they only can serve once a month. You know, like, why aren't you more committed? You can do more, you know? And, you know, my pastor is from years ago who I grew up under was real strong. And he would always make comments about people sleeping in the church on Sunday mornings coming. And he came to do our 25 years. And a good friend of mine had just worked all night and he had dozed off. And he had said something like, yeah, somebody's sleeping. And he woke up and I learned a lesson about, you know, people who come in church and serve and help. I've learned, you know, I don't make comments like that stuff anymore that's almost like belittling.
Yeah, I made those same mistakes, man.
I just
copied a pastor and I just talked about smoking and, oh yeah, you can smoke and come to our church. You may smell like hell. And then somebody that was working on her husband, thankfully that wasn't last year that I was.
No, I know.
In my early days. But yeah, that's stuff like that's so hard.
But who wants to serve or be a part, you know? And so, you know, it's that culture of, you know, just, I don't know, just try to establish that culture. That's all.
Yep. Yeah. We had a guy in our church, you'll love this story. But he was a gunner in World War II and he got shot down, I think in Hungary, but an Eastern Bloc country. And it's a miracle how he escaped. But his son-in-law is my friend. And my friend and his wife came to our church, and he never went to church a lot. But in his 70s, he started coming, and he stuck. And he lived 100. But at 99, I would look at him, and he couldn't hear me. I knew he couldn't hear me because he lived near me. So I knew how you know, I knew he wasn't getting my sermon. And he would fall asleep, you know, almost every – I mean, I don't think I made 5 minutes and he'd be gone a lot of times. But to think that a guy at 99 years old would want to be in the house of God around God's people, though you can't hear that great, though you can't, you know, you can't even stay awake, your body's at that stage. That's what I think we want, right?
It is.
Yeah.
100%. I agree with you. You know, I have a group of, I call them my moms. It's a group of ladies and men. They're probably all in their 80s. And, you know, the way our stage is, you know, we only have like 3 or 4 rows before our stage. And there's one service. All that older generation sits right there, right in front where the bass, the sub is. And, you know, and it's just to honor them. It means a lot. I agree. You know, you want those people there as part of the legacy and heritage for the younger people to see and worship. So yeah, I agree. You want them there. What you're saying.
Yeah. And you wanted to be there for the fellowship, the whole thing. But, and I don't know if you have or not, but I know I've made mistakes. I've made mistakes where I've been too strong. So there's nothing against that pastor, man. I've done it too. And I think it's one of the reasons God gives us wives. They help us with stuff like that. Yeah. But anyway, that was so helpful. So I just encourage you on the overseeing team maintenance side, if you're listening, that the more things, when I heard Paul talking about a minute ago, the more things you can include at once. And I'm sorry, I had a little ADD moment. How often do you have those meetings, Paul?
We do them on the months where there's 5 Sundays.
So yeah, about 4 times a year then.
3 or 4 times a year.
Yeah, we do them 3. Yep, we do them 3 times a year. Yep. And the more things you can combine, there was fellowship involved there. There was small group activity in what you defined. There was a little bit of vision casting. But the more, I think the more you combine, the more people are going to want to come. We add food to it, you know?
Yeah, we do too, because it's hard to get, it's tough for people to get there on time. And if they, get there, they haven't eaten. So we always have food like you do. I'm glad you said that because we do too, you know. And again, we look at it as it's an, you know, we're honoring. We're just trying to really take, let them know we are taking care of them like you guys.
Yeah. Well, God told Moses, you can't do it all by yourself. So you're going to wear out. And I just spoke on it Sunday on the seven deacons, you know, and just told them, you know, if I worked 15 more hours, how much good would that really do? You know, but if we're at it together, but there's a lot to it. And honestly, I mean, I think we had some people who decided to do some things when that message was over. But what I thought about more than anything when the message was over is how much one message doesn't do much. It has to be within your system and how it has to be something we just keep on doing. So, well, hey, in 2 weeks, we're going to have a guy with us who's going to talk about guiding our church through the election season. If you have, unless you're in 100% red state or 100% blue state, there's a lot of passion in people's hearts, and not many of us are. So let me tell you a little bit about the guy. He started out as my media director in the 1990s, ORU graduate. And I went in there and he had a picture of Ronald Reagan in his office and told me he felt called to the political world. And I thought, well, that's real nice. But he's our U.S. congressman today. Wow. And still a church member after all these years. And so it's going to be somebody who he and I talk together and we try to do the best we can. And that's not easy to do in today's world. So if you have any questions, email them to me because I'd love to hear any thoughts you have or any questions you'd want me to ask him. I'm going to listen to some things to try to ask some really insightful questions and to use this time well. But you might want to let your friends know. And let me just encourage you, if you know somebody this would really help, if you'll share it because you know, I know people are really, really busy and we're all looking for routines in our life that are good for us. And that's one of the things we're trying to do at Significant Church is try to fit into people's routine and to be a blessing within their routine. So if you have a friend, let them know. And we do this again. So it can be like a lunch appointment. We get to go out with people, maybe they're not in our proximity. We don't always have access to this, and we hope it was helpful to you today. Paul, anything you want to say before we close today?
No, it's just I appreciate you asking me, and it's an honor to be able to be a part of, you know, the organization, and it's just an honor to be able to, hopefully some of the things we talked about helped a few people, so thank you for letting me.
Well, I know I got help, so this is one person for sure. And thank you for taking the time to be with us because I know how busy life is and how busy things get. So thanks so much. And again, we hope that hurricane, I know it's going to hit on the north side of the state from what I've seen. But we're praying for those people because hurricanes aren't any fun. I think I saw it was going to get to Category 4. Is that right?
Yeah. I think that's the last I saw, somewhere 3 or 4. But, you know, they can intensify, too. So it's, you know, we've been through 2 4s ourselves, 4 and 5. And
That last one really devastated Sanibel Island up into Fort Myers. It was, I had no idea. I'm from Pittsburgh. We don't have hurricanes in Pittsburgh. So until I lived through one, I didn't realize how much they could do. But, hey, all you guys, thank you for being with us today. And, we'll be praying for you this weekend as you take your pulpit. And man, never give up on God's dream on the inside of you, especially those of you in the early days. Don't despise the day of small beginnings. If it's nurtured well, it's going to grow into something that exceeds what you're hoping it'll be. So that's our joy, to walk with you through the struggles and to be there in the good times, to shout with you. So give it all this weekend, and thank you for being with us. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Paul, thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you.